This is the state of things from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Thank you. You know, we all know the importance of a high school education. Gone are the days when students could drop out and expect to find any kind of a job. But still, across the country, there are kids who don't graduate. They don't graduate from high school, and school systems are struggling to change that. Nobody's been able to completely crack the problem, but our very own Guilford College, a county, I should say, has made a lot of headway. Its graduation rate has gone up steadily each year since 2006. The class of 2011 reached a record-breaking 83.1%, and that is pretty good for a school district with more than 71,000 students. In fact, Guilford's graduation rate is better than North Carolina's as a whole, and it's the best among large urban school districts in the state. So let's find out how they're doing it. And what does it tell us about how schools from across the nation can stop students from dropping out? It's the subject this hour on The State of Things, part of the American Graduate, Let's Make It Happen, a public media initiative made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Our first guest is Terry Worrell. She is a regional superintendent for Guilford County Schools. Terry, welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
And we're taking questions and comments from the audience, so please feel free to line up in front of that microphone right there. If you have something you want to say, that is my signal that you have a question. So feel free to line up and ask questions as the program develops. So, Terry, let me ask you some basic questions first. There's a difference, isn't there, between the dropout rate and the graduation rate?
Absolutely. What we are constantly focusing on, Frank, is to ensure that all of our students are college and career ready, and that we are looking at it as a comprehensive task in ensuring that students have as many options and opportunities as possible to complete high school. When we are looking at the graduation rate, we are looking at students who begin in ninth grade and complete high school requirements in 4 years. We also know that within Guilford County, we look at recovering students who have, for one reason or the other, stopped coming to school. We have graduation coaches in all of our traditional high schools that will go out and talk with students who have stopped coming to school and trying to see what created the concerns for the students and what are some possibilities of things that we can do differently within our school district in order to recover our students and get them back into school so they can complete their high school graduation requirements.
Well, I want to talk to you about the details and how you've managed that, but I want to also distinguish between that and the dropout rate, which is, in a sense, a lower standard. You're holding yourself to a higher standard when you use this four-year cohort method of determining graduation rates, right?
Absolutely. And one of the things that we've been doing is working with our community partners and looking at programs throughout the United States and trying to replicate some of the best practices that we have been able to find. And one of the things that we began within the Guilford County schools in the early 2000s, we began our middle colleges and our early colleges. And we are constantly expanding that program, because we have found that we have some dynamic programs in our traditional schools that meet so many of our students' needs. However, some of our students need smaller learning environments. They need smaller schools so that they have more personal attention at different sites. And we have been just truly blessed by our community partnerships with our colleges, with our universities, and with our community colleges.
Well, tell me how they work, the middle college and the early college.
Our students, as they are rising ninth graders, they apply for one of the different programs that we have here in Guilford County. And we have middle colleges on our college campuses, and our middle colleges are designed for students who are traditionally struggling in even as early as we start to see upper elementary school and in middle school. And some of the signs that you would typically see would be students who are disengaging from school, that they have attendance is a problem for some of those students, that they are possibly having poor grades. They are possibly not participating in the different clubs and the sports in middle school. And so what we like to do is we have a magnet school fair where we have our middle colleges and our early colleges, and then we have open houses at all of our sites and invite people to come in and talk with our students who are currently enrolled and to talk with our families who currently have students in our middle colleges or early colleges, and then our staff and our principals.
Well, it seems like you might miss a lot of the kids you really want to reach if you're going to the school to talk to them. I mean, do you sort of pull these kids in and say, look, I think middle college is for you?
Our counselors. We work very closely with our counselors, and also we work with our churches and our synagogues and our mosque to talk about the programs that we have available. And we're starting to see students from many of our private schools in the community, children who are being currently homeschooled, students who are currently opting to go to charter schools. We're starting to see them to return to the Guilford County schools because of some of these options.
So they go to a community college campus to take regular high school courses, or are the courses themselves different?
That's a great question, Frank. They are taking the courses. Many of the beginning courses are courses that are taught by Guilford County school teachers. And then as our students are ready and pass entrance tests in many occasions, they will start to take college courses. And we see it as the power of the site. You know, our students feel like that we are treating them more like young adults. They need to be ready for the freedom that you start to see being on a college campus. Our most recent middle college was that we began this past August at UNCG, and that's a very large campus. So the beginning of ninth grade year, all of our students attend their courses in the same building.
Well, that's interesting because we tend to think about kids who are getting into trouble, right? The ones who aren't showing up are the ones who need more structure. They need more supervision, and you're sending them to a college campus.
And one of the things that we're finding, Frank, is that we need to talk with our children. We need to talk with our students about what are they telling us? Why are they unhappy in our current traditional settings? And what are some of the things that they, in particularly, they need? And so many of the times when we're going out with our social workers and our counselors, and we have graduation coaches who spend time with our students talking about what are your unique needs and what type of schedule do you need, and do you need a middle college or early college, or do we need to work with your particular principal and counselor in your traditional high school and maybe modify your schedule so that we can more tailor it to fit that particular child's needs. Certain teachers with certain courses that they teach are very engaging for students who maybe need more hands-on environments, or maybe need more teachers who utilize problem-based instruction. And our school administrators, knowing our teachers and listening to our students and trying to see, you know, what meets their needs and understanding that not one size fits all of our students. And it is unacceptable for our children to not graduate with a high school diploma.
What percentage of the Guilford County students are now involved in either early or middle college programs?
We have approximately 2,000 students that are involved in different programs and in magnet schools, because we also have academies. We have the academy at Smith and the academy at Andrews, too. So just so many different specialized programs.
I've got about a minute left in this segment. I want to ask you about the graduation coaches, what role they perform and how they're different from guidance counselors.
One of the things that they do, they deal specifically with students who they start to see the signs that they are struggling once they are already in our traditional high schools. It could be a slip in grades. It could be a slip in attendance. It could be that their parent came to school and said that they were worried about the child. And the graduation coach actually works with our children, our young adults, to determine how do we get you back in school and how do we re-engage you. They also work individually between the teacher and the student. Let's say, for instance, the student is getting behind in a course, then they can go and work together and think about, may the student have extended time? May the student have an extra weekend to work on a project? Because our students are very bright, they're very capable, and we just need to find more unique ways to meet their needs.
And is this in addition to the counseling staff? In other words, did
Absolutely.
You have to go, you had to add staff
we
to
did.
Make this
we,
happen?
We added graduation coaches to all of our traditional high schools.
So we're going to take a break right here. We are taking questions this hour on the state of things, talking about the American graduate, how to make sure kids stay in school and graduate in 4 years. Our guest, Terry Worrell, she is regional superintendent for Guilford County Schools. Just ahead, we find out more about the benefits of early and middle colleges in Guilford on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things live from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stachow. Today we're talking about the American graduate, how to make sure kids stay in school and graduate from high school, focusing on Guilford County Schools and some of the strategies that have worked here. They've made a lot of success, a lot of progress, including improving graduation rates every year since 2006. With us, Terry Worrell. She is regional superintendent for Guilford County Schools. And joining us now is Jeff Tabiri. He is the Greens Bureau Chief for North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. Welcome, Jeff. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
And Margaret Arbuckle is Executive Director of the Guilford Education Alliance. Welcome, Margaret.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's good to have you and a live audience, and we're taking questions from the audience, and we have one right now. Yes, sir.
Yes, Terry Worrell mentioned both a graduation rate and a dropout rate, and I'm not clear as how those two relate.
Terry or Margaret, either one of you want to take
well,
that?
I'll let Terry.
Terry?
With our dropout rates, every year those are calculated with students who do not return to school. And it could be a student who does not return to school who is going from 7th grade to 8th grade. And that student could count as a dropout because they are not in school. With our graduation rates, these are calculated with our students who begin 9th grade and they graduate in 4 years.
So you can drop out any time is the point. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at a four-year graduation rate as well, not any
Absolutely.
Longer.
Graduating in 4 years. And what we are doing is with our students who may stop coming to school in 9th grade, then we go back out after them and try to determine what that particular child's needs are and what do we need to do differently to possibly get them back in school. Is it a middle college? Is it a different traditional school? Is it our Twilight program? We have a program that is a program that operates at one of our former elementary schools from 2 o'clock until 8 o'clock in the evening, where students can also recover classes. So just trying to determine in 4 years, we're talking about our graduation rate.
Jeff Tabiri, you've done some reporting. We were talking about the early and middle colleges, and I think we talked about the middle colleges, right, in the last segment, not so much about the early. And I know you've done some reporting. First of all, give us a sense of what the early schools are, the early colleges, and also what you're hearing from students.
The early programs are, my understanding, more designed towards students that are high achievers, students that are going to go to this program, and when they're done with high school, they're also going to have 60 credits of college work that will most likely transfer to a UNC Chapel Hill or a Tennessee or whatever the bigger school may be. The middle college and middle early colleges are more for students that are at risk of dropping out, and they're closely aligned with community college programs. So many of them, as they graduate from high school, and as some of them told me, they didn't expect to get to that point before this early middle college experience. When they graduate, they have oftentimes 2 full years of community college credit. And there were a handful of students I spoke with who were heading out of the early middle college at GTCC, Guilford Technical Community College, and going on to get their bachelor's degrees at UNC Greensboro.
So something that seemed impossible to a ninth grader is suddenly within reach.
Uh-huh. Pride was one of the things that struck me. And you know, because you talk to so many different people, sometimes young men and women can be difficult to talk to. They don't necessarily open up right away. And so many of the students I spoke to wanted to share their stories and also wanted to share what this whole early middle college experience was about. And they're coming in with different challenges, some from home, some behavioral, some learning disabilities or labels. And a lot of them, almost all of them, have turned a corner and started to succeed. And they've done very well in these programs.
What are they saying about this experience that made it so different from the schools, that the traditional schools where they hadn't been showing up?
Smaller class sizes was the first thing I heard about. Average student-to-teacher ratio was 15 to 1. And a lot of the students talked about not getting that attention in mainstream public schools. If they were struggling in geometry or biology, they didn't feel as comfortable going to find a teacher after class. There wasn't necessarily an opportunity for them to go and find a teacher and say, hey, I need you. I need to work through some of this. At these early middle college programs, one of the things I heard from teachers is that students are coming in an hour early to an hour and a half early to get extra support. The classes are on a block schedule because they're in line with the community college. So first class isn't until 11, and school goes until 4:30. So this particular early middle that I spent some time at GTCC doesn't have extracurriculars. So the school day goes from 11 to 4:30 for the most part, and students will come in at 9:30 or 10 to start to get some of that support.
Margaret Arbuckle, a big part of any school system, we hear it over and over, is community involvement, and that is something that's achieved in part through Guilford Education Alliance. Tell us about that.
Well, about 10 years ago, our community leaders recognized that in order for us to reinvent our economy, as our traditional manufacturing jobs were leaving Guilford County and North Carolina, that we needed to make certain that we also, in connection with our economic development efforts, had a high-quality public school system, number one. And number two, that the community understood that we had a quality school system and demanded of the school system that it be the best. So they created Guilford Education Alliance. We are a private nonprofit organization. We are fashioned after ones that exist across the country that are part of a public education network. And we both hold the schools accountable, but also make certain that the public has accurate information about public schools. So we see the issuing of reports and convening of people around education issues as being one of our primary purposes. We also engage the business community in connecting to our schools, and we do several things that really provide direct service to our schools. We operate a teacher supply warehouse where our teachers can shop for free for school supplies that have been donated through individuals and organizations and businesses, but gently used to new. And we estimate that we put almost $1 million worth of school supplies back into our classrooms, which has helped alleviate some of that budget pressure. We also lift up the schools and what's going on in our schools. Just this morning, I took a group of folks over to High Point Central who need to know that school is in a turnaround mode and it's on its way and doing well. They have a collection of choice programs for the students there. Tomorrow night, we are showcasing our students in art performances. We produce a show called On Stage, and we have about 500 of our students who perform in arts, dance, music, so forth, to perform at the big Civic Auditorium, War Memorial Auditorium. So we lift up our students. We issue information that gives opportunity for the community to compare our school district to other school districts across North Carolina and to state data. And we provide advocacy or opportunity for people to speak up and speak out about
which
the importance.
Which people?
The public.
So, you're talking about parents and, or
parents, but you know, only 25% of the population have children, school-aged children. So we really try to engage parents, of course, but also the community at large to speak up and speak out about why it's important to have good quality public schools.
On the State of Things today, talking about the American Graduate, we are at Triad Stage, the Upstage Cabaret, live from Greensboro, taking your questions as well. Terry Worrell, you heard, you know, Jeff's report, and I'm sure you see it every day as a part of the school board or school system staff. Kids in a different environment, in a different situation, come to school early, kids who are dropping out. What we hear over and over again about the problem with our schools, right, especially when we talk about poverty and underserved areas of the city is, well, you know, they come from places and they don't value education and nobody sees the importance of it and it's really hard to generate that. But this seems to give lie to all of that, that these very students who you would have thrown out and said, well, they just didn't get how important it was, they'll show up early if you have the right program.
We absolutely have to have the right programs and the right folks in the classrooms and the right counselors and working with our entire community. As Margaret said, Guilford Education Alliance has been tremendous at connecting folks within our community with our strategic plan within the Guilford County Schools, with offering even more options and opportunities. We talked about that this particular year we began our UNCG Middle College. In the fall, we will open an early college at North Carolina A&T State University, and it will be an early college with a focus on STEM education. And just a tremendous amount of community support and business partnerships with folks who have just stepped up and have really assisted us in making sure that our students have those types of options on a major research university campus where they will be able to work alongside our scientists who are there now with different community service projects and different summer internships and weekend programs and just everyone focusing on how do we ensure that our students have these options and ensuring that people have the information that they need to know, because it is important that all of our students are very successful.
Jeff Tiberi, you've been covering this area for a while now. Do you get a sense that that this does reflect a kind of turnaround? These things happen sometimes. They come and they go. And I wonder if your sense is that this is a kind of a sustained turnaround from your sense as a reporter and also in the community, if you feel people are looking at the school system.
You're talking about system-wide.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I would say absolutely. This was the brainchild. This was Terry Greer, who was the superintendent 11 years ago. From what I understand, this was his big push, and he wanted to do this. He's now the superintendent in Houston. The success of this has bred itself. So now there are about a half dozen of these early middle colleges and these academies, and by all accounts, they're good for the students who are getting a smaller class environment. They're good for some of the students in the larger mainstream classrooms because their classes aren't 30, 31 anymore. Maybe they're a little bit smaller. It does seem to be something, from everything I've heard, that is having very positive effects. If this has been said, it escaped me. The graduation rate for these early middle colleges is almost 100%. It's above 95%.
It is 100%.
Which is
from the early middle colleges,
from them,
right?
Aren't.
And we said earlier the whole system graduation rate is 83%.
Yeah.
But then you've got 100% from these programs, and these are the kids who would have dropped out otherwise, or pretty likely to have dropped out.
High risk
out.
Of dropping out.
Yeah.
And if you look at some of our middle colleges, as you talked about our middle college at GTCC, and if you think about our middle college that serves juniors and seniors at Greensboro College, you see lots of students having very strong positive relationships with our teachers. Many times when we are there, our students are going to get their lunches or bringing their lunches, and they're bringing them back in there, sitting there talking with their teachers as they're having lunch together and talking about their subject area, or they might be talking about their other parts of their lives. But just it's almost like our teachers there are additional counselors and social workers, and they have a tremendous passion for working in that environment, plus have a strong mastery of the content knowledge.
The word family came up, just to build on that really quickly, the word family came up with everybody I talked to. And one of the things that, you know, you're on a campus, and it's not necessarily a big state university with 30 or 40,000 students in a big fraternity field, but you're on a college campus. So I started to think about, all right, well, there are a whole lot of people who are 21. And if these kids want to get alcohol, they perhaps have access to somebody who could do it, recreational drugs and dating. And there are certainly other elements of things that could be a distraction or a problem. And I asked several of the students about it, and they said, almost to a T, we've learned our boundaries, and we don't want to do that because we don't want to let each other down, and we don't want to let our teachers down, which I thought was just a really interesting and felt like an honest response.
So they have a sense of themselves as they're identified as the middle early college. They know who they are as students. They feel that they're that, and this identity is what holds them accountable.
They know who they are. The one interesting note is that when they start taking classes in the community college, they don't have to identify as, oh, I'm 16, I'm 17, and sometimes they're blending in with a college class, and some of their classmates don't know that they're, in fact, in high school.
So, Margaret, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the great success that we're having through our middle colleges and early colleges, and its penetration across our whole system, then gives opportunity for the community to take pride in the fact that our schools are doing a good job, which then perpetuates itself to want to make certain that, okay, we're supporting our schools well. We are the only urban district that did not have a cut in local funding over the course of these past trying years with our economy. Are we doing what we can do to make certain our schools have the resources that they need? And talk about the quality of education that we offer here in our county.
Let me pursue that. There wasn't a cut, which is to say there wasn't the political will to cut programs that seemed to be working. I mean, is that what you're saying?
Well, in other words,
you would have cut the budget and people would have let them get away with it because, you know, the schools are broken.
Right.
But you're saying here there's not that feeling.
Here, our Guilford County commissioners have maintained the funding the same over four years. It would have been good to have had more, of course, but they've maintained it rather than cutting it. In every other district that they're, you know, it was kind of okay to cut this. It's not here.
Right, and it suggests that political will that you build. Is it more expensive to run programs like this, Terry?
When we truly think about it, we have determined that it truly is not because of the other expenses that are involved in a large traditional school. So we have seen it to be very cost effective with being able to operate these smaller schools. At NCANT, our middle college there, approximately 120 students. Our middle college at Bennett has approximately 120. Our middle college at UNCG, it will have 200 students. So they're not all just alike. We are thinking about what the unique programs are, what the capacity is for the college or the university or the community college campus, and trying to be very good partners with our folks there.
Have these programs had an effect on end of grade testing?
Absolutely. We have seen tremendous results with our middle college and our early college students. We know that our students, almost 100% graduation rate across the board. We look at scholarship money. We look at our early college at Guilford being ranked in the top 50 schools in the nation. Just really recognized for high academic performance and very challenging environments.
It sounds to me like the traditional school model is we're going to build a school and we're going to make these kids fit our program. And the ones who don't, we'll call them names. We'll call them dropouts or delinquents or whatever the current vocabulary is. What you're saying is let's construct a school system around the needs of the students, it seems to me. In terms of institutionally, how challenging is that? What are the barriers to that? What are the struggles in getting people to rethink and say, look, you know, they don't belong in a high school campus. We're sending them to college. How difficult is that?
Well, thinking about we're constantly reevaluating. We're constantly making sure that we are revising and that we are staying true to the purpose of each of our schools. And just this past year, when we, with very tight financial times, getting the support to open the middle college at UNCG was just outstanding. And now currently, with a lot of private funding going into the new early college at A&T. And thinking about, we need to make sure that we are good stewards of our money and that we are communicating that with our community about what's working well. When things are not working well, we are trying to completely revise those and edit those as needed.
Margaret Arbuckle, I've only got about 30 seconds left, but give us a sense of when you came in as the Guilford Education Alliance, whether you came in with a lot of ideas, here's what you need to do, or just a sense that something has to change and we're behind
you. I think the
you.
Community recognized that what we needed to do was to engage people in the knowing about the importance of public education, having factual information, and then using that to build community support for our schools.
How much of this came from the business community, a sense that without this, we're lost?
A lot of the impetus for creating Guilford Education Alliance came from the business community.
I want to thank my guests. Mm-hmm. Margaret Arbuckle is Executive Director of the Guilford Education Alliance, Jeff DeBerry, Greensboro Bureau Chief of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, and Terry Worrell is Regional Superintendent for Guilford County Schools. Thank you for being on the program. And our program will continue after a short break. American Graduate, Let's Make It Happen, public media initiative made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Please stay tuned. This is The State of Things, live from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Today we're talking about how we can stop students from dropping out of high school and make sure they graduate in 4 years. And we're focusing on Guilford County Schools, some of the strategies they've employed that seem to be working. And this program is part of the American Graduate, Let's Make It Happen, which is a public media initiative made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And so now we want to get the perspective from the ground. And joining us now is Jerome Mack. He's a senior at High Point Central High in Guilford County. Jerome. And also joining us is Carl Surrett. He is a parent of two children in Guilford County Schools, one in elementary, one in high school. He is also a mentor in the school system and a PTA president at Jamestown Elementary, part of a committee that's looking at how to help African-American males in Guilford County Schools achieve excellence. Welcome to you. So, Jerome, let's get your story first. You actually dropped out at one point, right?
Yes, I did. Actually, I dropped out the day before my birthday during my freshman year. It was really tough. I was between my I was already missing days. Like my eighth grade year, I missed like 40-something days because it was kind of tough at home. And then I get to ninth grade, and it's algebra, it's harder classes a little bit, getting used to that whole environment. It was
well, and you missed a lot. So when they're moving on in math and everything else, it's looking a lot tougher. But yes. Why are you missing? What's going on with you?
Well, my mom was out of a job for like I think a whole year and maybe a couple more months. So it was money tight. The money was real, real tight. I mean, sometimes we had to choose between do we want the lights cut off or do we want to eat today? And I just got tired of it. So when I came to school, I couldn't focus. I always was like a honor roll student, C in math. I could never get around it. But
doing better than I did, but go ahead.
But I just stopped focusing more on school. Once, like, I know my little sister from Tom's. I could see a look on her face when she would ask my mom, like, "What are we gonna eat today?" And then she would say, "We're gonna get something." And then my mom would give her whatever she had, and I can hear my mom's stomach growling and stuff. That took me. And I couldn't focus like I wanted to on school.
But even the job hunt turned more difficult than you thought.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I didn't know at the time that you had to have a high school diploma to work at McDonald's. Flip burgers? I mean, really?
Right. I mean, that's what we say you're going to do if you don't go to school. Turns out you can't even do that,
yeah.
Right?
So I was involved in some very bad at-risk activities, which I would never be proud of. But it did put food on the table, and even though that look was still there on my little sister's face, her stomach was full every other day.
All right, so you got something. It's working for you. You may not be proud of it. It's working. So what brought you back to school?
what brought me back to school was I kind of got an epiphany that I could do that as much as I want to, and it wouldn't change anything at all, nothing. And I remember trying to go back and talking to my counselors, and I was like, is it any way possible for me to graduate? And she said, yes. I mean, like, what a cheerful face. Like, yeah, like, you really can. I was, and I had to remind her, I was out of school for a whole year, for a whole year. So are you planning or... You know, is this?
Right.
I couldn't understand. I didn't understand it. And we sat down, and she wrote me a whole 4-year plan to graduate high school. And as of next month, I will be graduating on time.
So, what did that plan involve? What was involved in that?
Well, it was something called Saturn, which is like a recovery class to get a credit or something back, and I had to do like 50 hours of that. Which is like a couple months because you only can be there for a certain amount of time.
So when do you do that? When you do those 50 hours?
It was
hours?
Like from 3 to like 6:30 every day. And then so I couldn't get a ride some days, so I would have to walk a couple miles home or catch the city bus. But I'm a very determined person, so I took that.
So if you didn't have these programs then, I mean, if you went back to them and what they had was the high school that you left and, you know, well, you worked faster, how would that have worked out for you, think?
I don't think it would have worked out at all because without that Saturn class, I wouldn't have been able to graduate on time or even be, I guess, have any credits at all because I think I had, like, maybe 6 credits.
How about counseling? Was there somebody sort of paying attention to your progress?
There's a debt that I think will never be paid to my counselor, Ms. Holman Keller. I think she's recently married, but I always, I could never get that changed. But there's a debt between her and some of the teachers that I bonded with before I dropped out of school and my principal, who was an assistant principal when I dropped out. It's all the support and stuff and ROTC.
You joined
ROTC. That first day when the DIs came in and get on the floor, and you'd run in and out of the classroom and do 1,000 push-ups, and I loved it. Fell in love with that.
Well, and then homework looks like a breeze, doesn't it? Suddenly you start doing better in math because it's easy, you know? So, and you are actually going to boot camp pretty soon, right?
Yes, sir. 2 months, or I think... couple months after I graduate, I will be headed down to Parris Island in South Carolina.
All right. Well, it's a remarkable story. There's more of it, but I want to talk to you, Carl Surrett, and ask you if this story sounds familiar to you as a mentor and a PTA president and a father.
It absolutely does. One of the reasons I got into this is because of his story. Having 2 boys myself, did a really blessed academically and watching them achieve, volunteering and helping out. And that's how I got involved, volunteered to help my kids out. And they were doing well. But then I would see other kids in the classroom that would not be doing as well, were frustrated. And I just started asking questions. And I was like, well, what's going on? You know, and they would say some of it was a situation with a single mom at home. They were struggling, bills, different things, all pretty much literally his entire story. And I said, well, what would be different? What can I do to help you out? And from there, my involvement just turned into saying, okay, I've got to put a focus in place. Where do I want to mentor? How do I want to do this? And how do I want to do this the right way? And I took a conscious decision to say, I'm targeted single moms with boys, 12 to 17, and started working with them. And I said, because these kids are, this is going to be a problem, what's going on in life. And I started doing a study, and actually there was a report out that they said that if, you know, all the kids that drop out each year, it actually ends up costing the criminal justice system $4.7 billion a year, each graduating year. So that was disturbing to see that. And
well, describe your mentoring program. How does it work? How many people are involved in it now?
I have 12 right now that I'm working with. I go into the schools. Usually the schools my kids are at. I have one school that my oldest son was at, and he left there, but I told the school that I would stay there to help them too, to deal with some things. And so I have 12 boys. All of them were what you put at risk students, were usually failing, didn't want to go to class. And it's difficult sometimes. You got to reach them and kind of get them to open up.
Well, what do you do? How do you do that?
I put it at ease. I invite them over to the house. My wife cooks, so I'll bring them lunch, and I get permission. I talk to the moms, I talk with the school principal, and I tell them, you know, I go and ask, who are your toughest students, and give them to me. I feel like being in the ex-military, it's kind of easy. I've seen a lot of stuff, so these kids aren't that bad. And I go and I talk with them, but I go in with the agenda that there's nothing in it for me. I tell people, I don't get paid for what I do. I do this out of my own pocket, and I do it because I care about these kids. And when they see that, they open up, because a lot of kids, when I talk to them, they say, well, what do you get out of this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody really cares about me unless they're going to get something in their pocket. And so I decided to say this, that's not the way to do it. And all 12 boys are AB honor roll.
But, you know, here's the thing. And you're focusing on African-American males. And we know that there's statistically it's not a good picture in the public school system, right?
Correct.
And there's a lot involved in that. But, you know, when I hear stories like yours, the question always comes to mind. We have this school system, and we see this giant statistic about a failure to serve a given population, an identified population. We have people like you who will come up with a great program, a plan to pay attention, turn a few kids around. Why, in a sense, though, aren't we saying there's something wrong with the kids when, in fact, there's something wrong with the system?
There is something wrong with the system. I will say this about Guilford County Schools. What I do like about it is they, when they see a problem, they go to try to fix the problem. And that's where this committee that I sit on, the only non-paid employee on this committee, we talk about a lot of the problems that exist, why the suspension rate is high, why is the literacy level low. And we understand, Dr. Worrell said best, you know, everything doesn't fit in the box. And we have to think outside the box, and we have to be creative. Unfortunately, African-American males think different. There are different things that they're brought up. There's different situations that a lot of our kids have. And you can look at that on both sides. You could look at a high-income earning family and a low-income earning family. There are going to be different things that the kids are taught and deal with. And, it's a systematic problem. If you know it's there, and then you work towards fixing it. But our input came from kids. We actually pulled a number of young African-American males and asked them, what do you need in the school, traditional school, to excel?
What do they say?
And a lot of them brought up technology. Look at Motlew Elementary. Every one of the kids at Motlew Elementary has an iPad. And that was a partnership that came from community members and High Point University and other businesses. Absolutely great, but that was something they said, we want some things like that. They talked about some of the classes just being taught differently, you know, the way that traditionally being done. And it made sense. You know, you actually asked them, what do you need? And they're like, we need the extra time. We want people that really care and they're there for us.
Well, when you look at, I mean, one of the more disturbing things system-wide is the suspension rate for African-American males, far, far higher, even first-time suspension, say, for cell phone use compared to whites. So it's the first offense, and yet we go right to suspension when it's an African-American male, and we know the correlation between suspension and dropout.
Correct.
I mean, that seems like there needs to be some kind of education or thought put into sort of what's going on.
And that there. We looked at that. If you actually look at the numbers in the study that we've done, it shows that those that are struggling literacy wise are the ones that are struggling that are being suspended more. So, does it make sense to continue to suspend the kid for certain infractions? I understand there are major infractions that we need to suspend the child for. But we need to look at another way of how do we keep them from going home. I've had some kids tell me, I look forward to getting suspended because mom's not home. I can go home and play the video game or whatever. So we're really not benefiting them by sending them home. And that's a major thing that we're looking at, actually trying to reduce that number. And it benefits every kid because if they're in class, they're not disruptive, they're not being suspended, they understand their reason being there, it benefits every kid in the classroom.
Jerome, you talked about having this epiphany and going back to the school. What if you hadn't done that? I mean, does the school look for you? Do you think you'd have been found at some point? Or had people been coming to you and asking, where are you and when are you coming back?
No. I think the only time someone talked to me about it is when I was just about to drop out of school. Like, the dropout prevention guy was coming to my house, so are you really trying to do this? And, yeah.
You can tell because I'm not there
yeah.
how serious I am about yeah. not wanting to be there.
Yeah.
That would be a good answer. Well, are there things you think that the community is missing? What would you tell the community in terms of what people who don't have kids in school, what should we be doing to support and pay attention to making things better?
Well, one of the things is have something, I think, more creative or have a incentive or something for to keep kids in school, like not suspending school, like kids for crazy things like having a cell phone out or something, or just keeping them in. My principal told me when he has got me, him and my counselors have got me like mentoring my peers and stuff that's in danger of doing the same thing I'm doing. So
you're mentoring now. Yeah. You're talking. Okay,
one of the things me and him came up with is that the best thing you can do to some to a kid or someone my age is like keep them in school. That's mm-hmm. the best thing you can do. Not send them home or write them off or tell the parents that's struggling. Even my mom dropped out of high school. She can barely read. My sister dropped out of high school. But one of the things that I wish is somebody kept her in school. Like just keep them around it.
But then keep them in school for what? Because there's something that's driving you away. So keeping you in an environment that's clearly uncomfortable and not nurturing for you. So then what do you do, Carl, once we've done the wise thing, which is not send them home?
To also go back to the community part, businesses. I talk to a lot of businesses to get them involved with schools, I tell them, I say, you're actually going to have two choices, and maybe three. With these young people you have around you, they're either going to work for you, they're going to buy from you, or they're going to steal from you. If you don't help educate them, they're going to steal from you. And you won't have anybody to work for you or buy from you. So you're going to go out of business. And I talk directly to them that way. And a lot of times it's like a light bulb goes off to them to say, we never really thought about it that way. Because this is your future. These are our future. And I say to the community, even if you don't have kids in here, these are the ones that are going to take care of us when we get older. These are the ones that are going to be making decisions. And if we don't educate them, there's going to be nobody here to do that for us.
Yeah, but somewhere around $40,000 a year to keep someone in prison and about six or seven to keep them in school. So that's math that even you and I can do, Jerome. How's your family doing?
Well, right now, my mom has a job, even though she works 11 hours for nothing sometimes. My little sister, she's about to be in middle school, which is big, really big. My sister, she's at GTCC, and I think she's about to get her first degree. So everything is really all right.
I guess you're quite a role model. Good luck to you.
Oh, I'm trying.
Good luck. Thank you so much. Thanks very much. Carl Surrett is a parent in the Guilford County Schools, PTA president at Jamestown, and part of a committee that's looking into how to help the schools in Guilford County. Jerome Mack, a senior at High Point Central and about to graduate and about to go off to the United States Marines. That's our program today. Thank you very much for being with us. Of course, we want to thank the Simula Foundation, Joseph M. Bryan Foundation, GlaxoSmithKline, the Goodnight Education Foundation, and many listeners and businesses and organizations who have supported this project. Thanks also to Triad Stage here in Greensboro. Our program is produced by Alex Granato, Sean Wen, Megan Mataferi is our intern, Robin Copley is the technical director, and Peter Bombauer is our site engineer today, managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas, Susan Davis is our senior producer, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.